You intel officer by trade background?
Absolutely. But I actually came into the Marine Corps as a law contract.
Really?
I did. And so before going to TBS, I was just so excited about being a Marine. I just wanted to get after it. And I convinced my OSO, hey, I want to drop my law contract and go ground. And he just looked at me like I was insane.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
And he was like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I want to go intelligence. I want to be an intelligence officer. Wow. That's what I want to do. Because my platoon commander in OCS was actually an 0204.
Oh, okay.
Human intelligence, counterintelligence officer. And I was just so impressed by him. He actually commissioned me.
Oh,
I was like, hey,
awesome.
This is what I want to do. I've got to do this. Yeah. And so that's what I did. I came in as an 0204.
Yeah.
And then as a MACTAF intelligence officer, 0202.
Okay.
And then on to lat move to AD 61.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Equipping the Corps. One of the primary focus areas of Force Design 2030 is command, control, communications, computers, cyber intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance, and targeting, or what we commonly refer to as C5ISRT. Wow, that's quite a mouthful. In the Commandant's Force Design Annual Update released in April, he stated that we now have an enhanced understanding of the need to succeed and not just compete in C5ISRT. Marine Corps Systems Command's Command Element Systems portfolio provides and sustains many of these capabilities for the Fleet Marine Force. Marines need timely, actionable intelligence to develop plans for fires and maneuvers. Program Manager Intelligence Systems acquires the necessary capabilities to collect, process, exploit, and disseminate intelligence information. Today, I'm pleased to have the Program Manager for Intelligence Systems, Lieutenant Colonel David Bain, on the podcast to discuss how the portfolio is developing and fielding critical capabilities for our Marines. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for making time to be here. Before we get started, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you ended up coming to this acquisition thing?
Yeah, first off, Manny, thanks so much for having me today. I really appreciate you making the time to have me. I really personally think any day I get to come in and talk about intelligence systems at Marine Corps Systems Command is a fantastic day. It's just a great day. I love talking about our capabilities. And also, too, just for the listeners, it's not just intelligence. It's also information capability as well, particularly in the electromagnetic spectrum. So a little bit about myself. I am a lieutenant colonel in the Marine Corps, and I've been in the Marine Corps about 15 years. So I actually came in as a law contract, went ground when I got to TBS, because I absolutely wanted to be an intelligence officer. Now, man, if you were to ask me, did you know what that meant? I probably would have said, absolutely, I know what that is. Now I would say, no, but it has been a fantastic ride for the last 15 years.
So I got to tell you, I mean, it's interesting. So you came in as an intelligence officer. Did you ever envision yourself now being the guy responsible for the capabilities that, you know, outfit your community?
No, I don't know that at least initially coming in that I saw myself doing that. And speaking of that, I don't even know that I saw myself doing that right now.
Right.
At this point in time, when I lat moved into the MOS, the AD 61 ground acquisition MOS, in 2017-18, when I got here, one of my biggest mentors, Colonel Dave Burton, okay, was the program manager. And honestly, I've been kind of following Colonel Burton kind of around through commands. And he was either at McKiss when I was at MACTAF Intelligence Schools, Intelligence Officer Course, or he was at TUMEF when I was deploying to Mosul during my first deployment as the G2. So when I think about the people that came before me, I don't know that I saw myself in those shoes, but it's absolutely where I want it to be.
So you came to Marine Corps Systems Command as a subject matter expert in your field and then ended up sticking around.
I would say subject matter expert in the sense of being a MACTAF intelligence officer.
Okay, gotcha.
So in accordance with the Van Riper plan, Marine Corps intelligence officers come in, they pick a certain, there's a certain intelligence discipline they're assigned
to.
So signals intelligence, air intelligence.
Right.
And then you move on to become more of a generalist. And I've been so lucky in my career. I have been at 2nd Intelligence Battalion at CI Humic Company as a company commander. I've been at Radio Battalion, 1st Radio Battalion as a company commander there. I've worked at MEF, multiple MEF G2s. And so from the sense of having a wide swath of MACTAF intelligence, yes, I was able to come here, you know, after gaining that experience.
Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, it's a wealth of knowledge and experience to bring to the table. So with that said, can you tell us a little bit about your portfolio and the things that you do here?
At program
and I also want to, I apologize, but I also want to, you know, if you can focus on some of the things that impact the future of the Marine Corps 2030. So as we talk about those, I want to.
That's a great point, Manny, because a lot of times when I think about PM intelligence systems, I think about them in the context of Force Design 2030.
Okay.
I think about them in the context of, I think about our capability in the context of how the Commandant's articulating the stand-in force concept. So at a base level, what we do at Program Manager Intelligence Systems is we develop and sustain intelligence and information capabilities that help MACTAF commanders sense, make sense, and decide in whatever operating environment they find themselves at.
Right.
They find themselves in. That's it at a base level. Now, kind of unpacking that a little bit, you know, we provide capabilities across the intelligence spectrum. And I got excited earlier in your intro when you actually kind of talked about the intelligence cycle a little bit, because that's how I kind of think about my portfolio, is I think about those intelligence capabilities within that intelligence cycle.
Oh, okay.
I do.
Okay.
I do.
Yeah.
On the collection side, we have premier intelligence collection capabilities from like signals intelligence, identity intelligence, human intelligence, and terrestrial collections. We also have capabilities that allow geospatial and imagery analysts to pull down feeds from imagery from national theater level assets that provide imagery that we can overlay all source intelligence analysis on to provide that MACTAF commander, both at the small unit level and at the much, much larger, you know, MEF level, situational awareness on real-time adversary movement. And so when we talk about the adversary too, right, that's the whole point of the intelligence cycle, is to provide situational awareness, indications and warnings on what the adversary is going to do. And I think if you listen to the Commandant talk about our capabilities and where we want to go writ large in the Marine Corps, he's going to talk about the pacing threat.
Right.
He's going to talk about the pacing threat. So when I think about information capabilities, electronic warfare, when I think about intelligence capabilities, signals intelligence, human intelligence, I think, you know, in kind of two ways. Number one, hey, what does that Marine need? Because at Marine Corps Systems Command, Manny, we equip the individual Marine.
Right.
Right. And that's why I tell my team, right, we equip the individual intelligence Marine. We equip the individual incidental EW operator, that corporal, that lance corporal, that sergeant, whose one job is to use that capability in order to conduct to meet the unit's mission. So when I think about the, you know, equipping that individual Marine, and also we look at, hey, that adversary, what is the adversary? Right now, the pacing threat that we're looking at helps to drive a lot of our decision-making when we look at requirements and also the performance specifications that we need to meet in order to keep pace with the threat, as well as where Marines are going to be in the future.
I want to take you back real quick, because you mentioned you equipped the individual Marine. And so, you know, for years, the Marine Corps has often talked about the strategic corporal, the individual out there. So I think it's very important that you kind of hone in. And I look, everybody's special. All our communities are special. All our, you know, everything we put together as a MACTAF is critical to getting the mission done. But I want to focus a little bit more on that individual Marine. When you say that, how much feedback, how much interaction do you have with the Marines out in the fleet? And in particularly with the Marines within your community, the intelligence community?
Manny, I would say constantly.
Okay.
Weekly.
Okay.
Weekly. If PM Intelligence Systems had a secret sauce, and I think probably you could say this about anywhere else in Marine Corps Systems Command, but if we had a secret sauce, it would be our continuous laser focus on our user communities, on the individual Marines that are on that's on this equipment. And I'll give you a quick vignette. It goes even down to the technical instructions that we send out, right? And so for the listeners, technical instructions help Marines. Most of the time, that corporal or lance corporal who's been given this document, and they've got to put this thing or that thing on a system,
right?
And so, even down to as I was reviewing a technical instruction 2 days ago, and I noticed that a couple of the pictures were blurry, and I thought, well, you know, okay, I know what that's talking about, but. Is
but Lance you Corporal, live it and breathe
I do,
it every day.
I do.
And maybe even the engineer who designs that
knows it.
Yeah.
And I mean, it wasn't bad.
Right.
But I was thinking, does Lance Corporal Smith?
Right.
This is going to be his one job.
Right.
This is how he's going to get his pros cons, right? So I want to set him up for success. And so we got to do that at like each step of the way, Manny. It's so important.
And again, everything we do for the individual Marine, because ultimately the success of the mission relies on that Marine, the unit of Marines and whatnot. How closely do you work? You talk about the individual Marines. Let me cast the net a little wider and bring in the other services. How much stuff do you do with the other services?
Working with the other services is critical in PM Intelligence Systems, not just from an economic standpoint, from an economy of scale standpoint, because you know as well as I do, Manny, we have to make every dollar count.
Right.
We do. Right. A lot of times that happens when we partner with our sister services to bring capabilities to the Marine Corps. We're able to get those economies of scale, and we're able to make that dollar stretch. But working with our sister services, incredibly important. I'd say our first stop is Navy. Right. So as we talk about the Sand and Force, as we talk about Expeditionary Advanced Space Operations, that's all about creating maritime domain awareness, supporting sea control, sea denial. And so we want to make sure that we're lockstep with what the Navy's doing, and they understand where we're going, and we collaborate. As another quick example, we have an initiative right now that is looking to provide force protection at bases and stations here in CONUS, continental United States. And so just tomorrow, we are meeting with Air Force, Navy, Army, and as well as our Naval Surface Warfare Centers, as well as some of our other mission partners to create wide SA and situational awareness on that issue to find out, hey, where can we collaborate? Right. Because they want to as well. They want to know where we're going, and we want to know where they're going.
Ultimately, the success of anything we do is in a joint domain.
Well, so
we're
yes.
all going to operate individually, but at some point we got to come together.
That's it. And so when we talk about maritime, working in the maritime domain, maritime domain operations, it is all about the joint force. If you think about the stand and force concept, and this is what gets me so excited about C5ISRT. It does, because...
So you can say that. That rolls right off your tongue. That doesn't come off my...
C5ISRT, right? Yeah. So if you look at the core of the Stand and Force concept, the Marine Corps is going to be the eyes and ears of the joint force in that through competition into conflict. And so we have to... So when we think about going from, through that continuum... We think about the capabilities, and honestly, man, those capabilities are one part of that. It's a part of it, but it is a part of providing the Marine Corps, number one, the situational awareness, targeting intelligence, battle damage assessment capabilities they need. But it also it feeds into a much larger picture, and it's all about the joint force. It's all about enabling the joint force
right.
to close kill chains, and to lead to success, so that we can successfully come out of conflict and meet the goals and aims of our nation.
You started talking about different capabilities and whatnot. Let me just ask you, and then what I want to do is I want to talk about specific capabilities that maybe you're working on a little bit. But I want to ask you, real simple, what's an average week look like for you? Who are you talking to? Who are you reaching out to? Who are you? What's Lieutenant Colonel David Bain doing on any given week? And how many folks does he have to reach out and touch to bring all this together?
Well, this is another reason why I love this business, Manny. I love it. And for everybody on the everybody listening right now, and Marines listening who aren't acquisitions, who are thinking about coming to acquisitions, there's a lot of reasons to come here and work and understand this business. And so I won't give you a week. How about I give you the last 20 hours?
Okay.
Fair enough. So I
hope there was some sleep in there somewhere, but give me 20
there
hours.
There were a couple hours of sleep, but just in the last 20 hours, I'm in a VTC with CD&I, Combat Development Integration, McWill, three MEF, and three MIG. That's the MEF Information Group.
Right.
So that I'm in that SVTC for about an hour and a half. We've got Major General, Brigadier Generals, Colonels from across Quantico there, to include my predecessor, Colonel Dave Burton, who I always love to have a chance to talk to. But we're sitting there and we're talking about these problem sets that Marines and 3MEF in Okinawa are getting after right now. Problem sets that they are dealing with. This isn't an academic exercise. They're doing it right now.
And if I may, not to cut you off, but to paint an interesting photo, because all the people you described in that group, you've got the warfighting lab, got experimentation, you got acquisition, you got the operational forces, and then you got the connectivities between all of that.
You've got requirements development.
Right.
So you have. I mean, what? And where else? And I think, again, that's the magic of the Marine Corps is our ability to bring all that together in one room, and
have usually in very short notice.
Mostly in very short notice, right? So at any rate, I got to go from that. And I actually had my counterpart at CE Intel, which is over at CD&I. Mm-hmm. I got a chance to talk with him about, these are the next steps we need to take because we learned this information from 3MEF.
Right.
And then actually I go home, I get on and there's a couple documents that are kind of coming through, some policies, and I've got engineers calling me, and I've got my deputy calling me, and so I take a few minutes. Get up to speed on what's happening there, and then of course I put the phone down and have dinner with my 1-year-old baby girl and my three other girls. Yeah, I mean, and of course my wife, who's a saint. So happy that this is probably another podcast, but just very happy that I was able to go through this 15-year journey with her.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
That's probably another hour, but it's been fantastic there. Anyway, so I got a short amount of time where I had to sleep.
With a 1-year-old, I guess you're starting to get back into the sleep cycle again.
Right. But yeah. Trying to. She's struggling there. Yeah. But then I get up. I get to get a couple of employees on the phone where I've got some one-on-one coaching that I'm doing with them with the individual. Which is just what I live for, Manny. That individual acquisition professional, that is so passionate, so committed. Our whole team at Marine Corps Systems Command is that way, Manny. I got to tell you, from the bottom to the top. That's one of the reasons I love working here, and it's why I would tell any Marine who's thinking about, hey, what do I do for a broadening, supporting establishment tour? This is it.
Well, if I wasn't already here, you'd make me go back in the uniform and then come back in.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But now that you mentioned team, tell me about your team, the intelligence maintenance team. Roughly how many folks do you have? And do you have other Marines there with you?
I do. We have a good amount of Marines. Probably a little over a squad's worth of Marines.
Okay.
And not just a squad in the sense of younger Marines, but a squad worth of captains and senior staff NCOs,
gotcha.
Majors that really bring that real world just came from the fleet intelligence experience that they can apply. To our capability development.
So a good cross level of experience.
A good cross level of experience. Actually, absolutely necessary experience in order to make to take a requirement, right? To take a requirement on paper and make it a thing, make it reality. We really rely on those Marines. On top of that, we have about 100. Government civilians, Marines, but also industry partners that support PM intelligence systems daily. And that's just what we have on our TO.
Right.
When I think about my team, I also include the Naval Surface Warfare Centers, Naval Information Warfare Center, critical partners, along with our FFRDCs, our federally funded research centers such as MITRE, such as Johns Hopkins APL, which, by the way, that was part of that's going to be a part of my 20 hour swath, which was I got out of that coaching, coaching call,
yeah.
And I drove 20 minutes down the road to MCIA, and I got into a conference with Intel Department from DCI. I had Johns Hopkins APL there, as well as other stakeholders from across. The intel community. So we are engaged with the Marine Corps intelligence community daily, if not weekly. But what makes that happen, Manny, if I could, is the people that work in PM intelligence systems, the level of passion and commitment, and the know-how. Really, what helps us bring those capabilities to Marines almost monthly. We're fielding something quarterly, Manny. We are so busy over there. It's exciting. And that is those are just opportunities to meet with and see Marines.
So again, I love the passion and drive that you've talked about here, and I see that across the command. I mean, the desire to get capabilities in the hands of Marines, but in particularly in your case, it's not just get the capability in their hands; it's really fusing them into the being part of what it is that you're doing here. I know. COVID's challenged some of us. It's changed a little bit of how we work. Has it had a great impact on you? And how have you overcome it?
So, yes, it has. It has had an impact, both in PM Intel as well as outside. I'll start with PM Intel. Number one, the government, civilians, Marines, mission partner, industry support that we have in PM Intel have been wildly successful at overcoming COVID obstacles. One of the things I think we miss is that personal connection.
Yeah.
I mean, Manny, this would be a completely different podcast if we were on the phone talking with each other.
Right.
And so this connection that we have right now is part of what makes PM Intel happen. That personal connection. And really that's kind of the culture of the Marine Corps, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is I've got that Marines to the left and to the right of me. Yeah. I have their back. And you know it because you see them. And so I think that has been challenging for us. But the team's overcome a lot of those obstacles from executing the mechanics of acquisition to connecting, right? And I think what we found is we have to be very deliberate about connecting with each other, how we connect with each other, when we connect with each other. And it's got to be with each other. And we have to be very deliberate about how we do that. But we've also found that we have to be deliberate about how we do that with the fleet.
Mm-hmm.
COVID has seen us develop some very creative solutions, such as virtual fieldings. So I put something on a plane or a boat. I send it over somewhere. I call a POC at 1MEF.
Right.
And I set up an Adobe Connect. And I do an inventory, a virtual inventory of gear. I do a virtual training of gear. Is it what we want to be doing as Marines? As Marines, we want to be kneecap to kneecap with each other, right? But have we been able to overcome it? Yes, we have. I'm excited to see us as we get to the next normal. The next, you know, what that next normal
is. We keep working on that next normal.
I know. Another challenge for COVID has been the supply chain. Mm. You know, I'm sure we have some industry partners who are listening to this podcast, and I'm sure they will echo these sentiments, which is, you know, as we look at those key components that make these, make our intelligence and information systems, everything from microchips to, you know, processors, amplifiers, computers. And you see this in your everyday life, right?
You see the
LG TV, the 65-inch that is a few hundred dollars more now.
The impact of the automotive industry.
The impact of the automotive industry.
For some of the same stuff.
Right, so, absolutely. Even something as you know, something that you wouldn't think of, like electric guitar. The humbuckers that go in an electric guitar, those are components that are having supply chain problems.
Right.
So that has been that's been a challenge. The key there is continuous communication with our industry partners. We gotta have that communication. We gotta understand how to get more creative. And I think that's where I want to go here in the next 12 months, is ensuring communication, regular communication with our industry partners. To talk about that assured supply chain, to talk about how we can, what are some of those ways that we can mitigate? We're going to be pushing industry to think about that.
Well, I'm glad you. That's actually a great segue to what I want to touch on, because everything we do here, the field capability, ultimately we involve an industry partner. We don't do this on our own.
No,
and we rely on obviously our you know, industrial base to come through and put goods on the table when we need them. So I'm glad you went down that road. Before we talk too much about what you're looking for from industry, can you share with us a little bit some of the things you've done over the last year and a half? Are there any new capabilities that Marines out there have gotten their hands on? Can you share with us?
Yes, I would absolutely love to share with you capabilities. And you're just going to, I'm going to keep going, and you're just going to cut me off.
No worries.
Because we've got so many things happening right now in PM Intel Systems. And I'll start with our identity operations team. Okay. So our identity operations team recently fielded the identity dominant system Marine Corps Increment 2, which is a biometric collection device. And when I say biometrics, I'm talking about latent fingerprints, irises, face, biographical information. And we came up with a really elegant, what I think is an elegant, unique concept, where we've taken a Samsung smartphone, we've put it inside a housing that's been made particularly for biometric collection. We've been able to increase the rate of latent fingerprint capture from 1 to 4 at a time. And so while technically that is interesting, what does that do? That is what that does for the Marine is that the Marine that is taking those biometrics, that is less time that Marine is focused in on taking a biometric, and more time that he's focused on security for his squad, his platoon, etc. He or she are focused on that. So that's what we're focused on, Manny, is that operational relevance to each of these. I'll go to the next one. Our tactical signals collection system. I had a chance to talk with the commander about this yesterday. Very excited about what we're doing there. When we're talking about that collection system, we're talking about intercept, geolocation, direction finding capability that we can provide to signals intelligence, electronic warfare teams, which will be quite important as we go into, again, that stand-in force concept, right, ensuring the Marine Littoral Regiment has what they need at the small unit level to support Expeditionary Advanced Base Operations. So back to the capability. What we're doing this year is we're going to be fielding receivers, and these receivers will enhance the capability of signals intelligence Marines to support the commander's battle space awareness. And really, when you think about really what's the capability this provides, and I also like to think about in terms of domains. So we've got maritime domain, ground domain. One of the places where we're making a lot of headway, I think, is in electromagnetic spectrum, right? When we're the EMS domain, and so our ability to create and enhance understanding in that domain, whether it's through electronic protect, electronic support, electronic attack, is crucial to the success of the stand in force in the future. So we're going to be actually going out to 3rd Radio Battalion, going out to 3MEF here soon in the next month or so to field those receivers.
Wow.
And those are exciting too, because we get to work with so many other agency partners that really help us get into the X ring when it comes to those signals intelligence capabilities. And that's our goal. That's our goal. And I'll move on to my electronic warfare team. Again, we could probably spend another hour on what they're doing, but it's exciting. Right now, we have a middle tier acquisition initiative that's going on right now for the MAGTAF electronic warfare ground family of systems. Okay. And I love talking about this one, Manny, because seriously, it's exciting. When you're talking about what capability, what technology industry can offer, this is a great case study for what industry can offer. And the headway that we're making with not just providing capability to Marines, but opening up the doors, the aperture of what industry can contribute to this problem set. So with that, we have this capability that employs modular open standards that will allow us to tap into previously untapped parts of industry to provide interoperable open architecture capability inside of this box, right? That provides that does electronic warfare and so much more, by the way. And so we recently went to test on this middle tier acquisition, and you've had other people on that have talked about the authorities that we've been given,
right.
Some of the authorities that we've been given, and really, you know, it's about, you know, this is also a kind of an exercise in credibility on our part too, right? And be able to take those authorities and to act on them,
right?
And so it's been difficult. Some of the COVID concerns, the supply chain concerns have messed with our testing timeline, and they have. But pulling back out of the weeds there with MEGFOSS, what this capability does, Manny, is it provides it will provide opportunistic convergence for signals intelligence and electronic warfare.
I think that's a great title for it.
Opportunistic convergence. I think that's where we're going, yeah. And we're seeing this in different places, with inside the portfolio. So, for example, when we talk about a stand-in force, a small unit of Marines that need to conduct a signals intelligence and EW mission, they're not going to be able to carry all the things, you know, right now that we say this is how you do SI and EW.
Right.
This technology is going to allow us to converge. And what does that mean operationally? It means that the corporal, the sergeant, they're going to need to carry less. It means that they're going to be more mobile, more agile. And what that does overall from a kind of operational standpoint is it allows us to create risk for the adversary. When we're mobile, when we're agile, right. And when we can employ...
And you're doing all of this in a smaller footprint.
Absolutely, in a smaller footprint, right? Yeah. We reduce size, weight, and power. Mm-hmm. So it's about creating an agile, supporting an agile force that can close those kill chain within seconds. That's really what I keep the team focused on.
That's awesome.
And so, along that same vein, Manny, going to my terrestrial collections and human intelligence... Mm-hmm. We are looking at, speaking of authorities, again, unique contract strategies, contracting options that are available to us, like other transaction authority.
Yep.
That will allow us to really hone in on what Marines need, as well as what industry can offer, and do that relatively quickly, and provide. And what is really the kicker here, with OTAs. Is that pathway to production, that follow-on pathway to production,
right?
That helps us speed up the rate that we can bring capability to Marines.
It's funny you mentioned that, because I think one of the constant complaints we hear from everybody, the Op 4, everybody, is always how long it takes, how long it takes. Things take time to develop and whatnot, but I think it's you hit on a critical message there. And the fact is that we, the Marine Corps, as all the services, have new authorities that Congress, you know, granted us a few years ago in the form of these MTAs and OTAs to really help us speed up the process a little bit, to allow us to take a little more risk as we're looking to field, because the Marine can't wait. The Marine can't wait for 5 years for you to deliver a capability that he or she may need on the battlefield tomorrow. So I think that's I think your team's done a phenomenal job with taking some of those opportunities and being able to execute and turn them into some of the products that you've been talking about.
Absolutely, it's really what it is, you know, kind of going back to that secret sauce. It is engaging with Marines, with the Fleet Marine Force, weekly, but it's also continuously engaging with our requirements developers, engaging with our advocates at DC Information, and particularly for us, the Director of Intelligence is a big advocate for us, as he provides his vision for Marine Corps intelligence capability support, helps us to kind of understand where we need to go in the future, how we need to orient our formations in the future. It's an exciting time to be in Marine Corps acquisitions, and in particular, intelligence systems.
Well, this is incredible modernization that the Marine Corps is going through. And I think, you know, I mean, again, I mentioned this before, you can talk about all the capabilities, but a lot of that starts with your intelligence. And your intelligence is going to drive a lot of the things that the Op 4 is going to do. So certainly a critical component and an early component to anything that we might get involved in. You've touched on a lot of great things. You touched on some of the things that your team has been working on and fielding. What can Marines expect over the next year or so? I know you're going out to the Pacific, to 3rd Radio Battalion out there to do some fielding. What are some of the things out in the near future for you?
So I think looking into the future, as we look to support multiple warfighting functions. So in our portfolio, we support intelligence, information, and actually force protection. So three of the seven warfighting functions. And so across, from a warfighting function perspective, from intelligence through force protection, Marines should expect increased integration of artificial intelligence and machine learning.
That's a great point. I didn't even look to touch on that. I'm glad you brought that up, because it's an area that us older folks, myself, sometimes have a hard time grasping. But if we really want to be successful in the future, we got to understand the role that AI is going to play on everything we do. And today's young Marines, I like to use this analogy. I mean, they're born with an iPad in their hands. So when they come in, it's nothing new to them to take three or four tablets and work them all at the same time. I see my kids doing it.
Absolutely. And you know, artificial intelligence and machine learning is much more widespread in our lives. From a Domino's pizza app to Netflix, to your curated trending now options on Netflix, to Facebook, your Facebook algorithms. The difference, I think, the qualitative difference with intelligence and information systems is that, you know, where at times in the commercial side, you'll see them incorporating biases into those algorithms in order to, you know, provide content and curate content that that people want to see, right? Or to advertise. And maybe it's not quite a stark of a difference, but in our instance, you know, we want machine learning algorithms that actually help us to cut through biases, that help us to find best of breed information, current information, relevant information, because something that every intelligence officer deals with is the shelf life of information. It is relevant only for so long. It is like a gallon of milk, and the gallon of milk that you put in your refrigerator this Saturday is not going to be the same gallon of milk that you pull out 8 days from then. It's not. And so you've got to think about it like that okay, how can I get that most relevant information to the individual analyst in seconds across a wide swath of databases, and not just Marine Corps databases, but joint databases. So how can I get that information to them? How can they use that to, you're talking about the intelligence cycle, to analyze, to exploit, and disseminate in seconds? Because it's not just about the product, it's about what the product informs. In our case, it could be kinetic, non-kinetic effects, targeting, battle damage assessment, which we don't talk about a lot, which I don't hear a lot about, but which is critical. Understand the effects of different capabilities that you put out in the battle space. Taking what we've learned from the commercial side, and integrating that into our machines, our capabilities, and that, you know, so that we don't necessarily take the Marine completely out. We take the Marine and put them on top of the loop, right. Put him or her on top of that loop.
If I may, you're facilitating that individual's ability to be able to take and process all that data and make an educated decision.
That's it. And if I could, what's so exciting about that is that it's about, at the core, it's not about ones and zeros.
Mm-hmm.
It's about bringing out what is the most unique about that Marine analyst. And it is their ability to think, to put information in context. It's hard to have AI and ML that really does that now, what humans do. So we look to develop capabilities and systems that bring out the best of what the Marine can do, and help them get to that point, that human part, mm-hmm. faster. Because that is where the difference is.
Well, that's fascinating. And I think, you know, this has been extremely informative this far, and I'm sure we could talk for quite a while longer. But I do want to ask you a couple other quick questions. I think you mentioned these are exciting times, and I think there's some great capabilities that Marines will be looking forward in the near future. Technology is evolving so fast and so furious. So kudos to you and your team for the ability to sift through a lot of that and try to figure out the best of breed to get into the hands of our Marines. But I do have to ask the question, what keeps you up at night besides your one-year-old?
She's done that a whole lot more recently, and I do not know what's going on there, Manny, but she has. At any rate, what keeps me up at night? Okay, first and foremost, as a program manager, and sometimes, Manny, I don't love saying program manager, because you manage things and you lead people. And so what keeps me up at night is, am I doing everything I can to ensure that my people are the most ready for what's next? Am I bringing enough of my A game daily to ensure that they're ready? That is 100% in my, you know, my kind of decision space is to look ahead and think about, are they ready? Do they have the resources? Do they have what they need at their disposal to get Marines what they need? So first off, I'm thinking about my people. And it's not just my government civilians and my Marines, but it's my contract support, it's our mission, it's our industry partners, it's our Naval Surface Warfare Centers. Do they have what they need to succeed? Second thing I think about is, as I look at the future operating environment and I think about where Marines are going to be, I think about the pacing threat. One thing that really keeps me up at night is logistics.
Mm.
So it is exciting to develop the thing and to take this new thing out to Marines and put it in their hands. But the work, right? It's like your car. Or I could analogize to when I bought my 8-year-old a guinea pig.
Right.
So I bought this guinea pig and that took like, I don't know what, $30.
Right.
But oh, by the way, now it's been almost a year and I've spent $800 on stuff for this guinea pig. But you can think about it, you know, take that and take it to an EW system, take it to a ground reconnaissance system. And so I get this to this thing to the Marine, and it's got to last. Right now I can ensure that from a logistics and engineering standpoint, I can sustain it in CONUS, in Garrison. I can get them the necessary updates. And so I think for our listeners, one way to kind of get into the mindset of where I'm going is, okay, if a Marine out forward runs out of bullets, I got to get the Marine bullets.
Right.
Okay. Now what happens if I've got a machine learning algorithm that is learning? It becomes actually a different software, qualitatively a different kind of software. And I've got to ensure that cybersecurity wise, I can get a patch there to ensure continued resilience in that contested space. And when I say contested, I don't just mean enemy soldiers running across the hinterlands.
Right,
I mean is attacks in the electromagnetic spectrum, cyber attacks. Right. How can I ensure that Marines have continued resilient access to the capability when we have denied degraded comms? How can I ensure that, are we doing everything we can to ensure Marines have access to that? That it's going to work when they need it most. That keeps me
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, it's interesting. First of all, I want to compliment you on something you said, because, and there's a lot of things I compliment you on. It's been a great discussion. It really has. I wish I had more time, but it's fascinating because you talked early on in the show about outfitting the individual Marine. And in my mind, you kind of came full circle, because one of your concerns was your individual people. So it's people ensuring that other people get the capabilities they need. So it actually goes to something that commander stresses all the time. It's a great business that we're in, but really it's the people business that we're in. Ensuring that both the people who are getting the capabilities and the people who use them get what they need when they need it. Listen, this has been a fascinating and very intriguing. I'm sure we could talk a lot more about some of this. And what I'm going to tell you is I'm going to keep the door open to have you come back here at a later date. And maybe we can dive down a little deeper in specific capabilities. But I think you've given us a quick, broad overview of the work, not only that you've been doing, but the work that continues to lie ahead of you to ensure we have a ready and relevant force in 2030 as the Commandant's vision. A lot of conversation, but before I let you go, we got to get to our fan favorite part of the show, and that's our lightning round. So I got to ask you, are you prepared for some tougher questions?
I think so.
All right, we'll give it a shot. Let's roll with it. So first and foremost, what's your favorite duty station?
Camp Pendleton.
Oh, that's easy.
Absolutely.
Quick response.
Well, I'll tell you why, because there's something like over 100 some odd microbreweries in the San Diego area. Fantastic.
We were talking logistics earlier, so we'll get right to the logistics.
Right. So, of course, I every Marine loves Quantico. At Crossroads in the Marine Corps,
absolutely.
I think I heard Lieutenant Colonel Feltham say.
Yeah.
But I would say Camp Pendleton. Can't beat 70 degrees year-round.
I've been here 3 times. I don't know why I keep coming back. But I did do a tour at Camp Pendleton and loved it. What's a TV show, book, movie, or podcast you'd recommend?
I'll give you a couple if I can.
Okay,
just
absolutely.
Real quick.
I'm going to allow that opportunity because my producer is quick to write down notes when people make recommendations, and then she forces me to do homework. So please.
Okay, great. Yeah, so I'll give a real quick book recommendation. So for everybody that's listening, I would say Humility is the New Smart by Hess and Ludwig. In there, we're talking about, if I can, just real quick, how do we create those capabilities that bring out the best in what really humanity has to offer? When we get into automation and automated processes, I think people get maybe rightly so scared about their future prospects. But it's about finding your place in that future environment. And bringing out the best. In our case, I want to bring out and help the Marine, the individual Marine, bring what they have, their training to the table faster. So Humility is the New Smart. Next, I would say Thinking Fast and Slow by Dr. Kahneman. In that, there's a great discussion about System 1 and 2 thinking, but also diversity. When I think about diversity, Manny, I think about diversity in the sense of lethality. And just real quick, I'll
No, please. It's fascinating.
Diversity of thought gives us, ultimately, I think, better decision making. Better decision making leads to increased lethality, and that's what the Marine Corps is all about. And then finally, I'll say we're on the rocks for a podcast. I'll give a plug for General Berger. Just recently was on World on the Rocks. So everybody out there, go ahead and go listen to that.
I would say they're my biggest competitor, but they're way out there above me.
No, they're neck and neck.
Great. Yeah, neck and neck. They're doing great. And I know the Commandant's been on it several times. They do a great job. So thanks for that one. Got to ask you, if you weren't doing this, what would you be doing? What would David Bain be doing now? A lawyer, maybe?
If I wasn't a program manager for Marine Corps Intelligence Systems, number one, I don't know that I even think about that.
Okay.
But if you're gonna force me to,
I'm gonna put you on the spot.
Put me on the spot. I would say, you know what? I would say a musician.
Do you play the guitar?
So I do play the guitar. I also play the trumpet.
Oh wow!
I was in a big band jazz orchestra
awesome.
In college. And so we played, you know, Glenn Miller, Take the A Train, big band jazz type.
That's awesome.
And I got to tell you, it's exciting. So if I was better at it, then that's maybe what I'd be doing.
That's what happened to me and my guitar. I have two great guitars. They're both on display. I can't tell you the last time I picked them up. So,
right. So
if you could have any superpower, what would it be?
So, I've heard this before, right? So I can't say invisibility, can I?
Well, you can. It used to be one of my favorites, but I think I'm going to change it. But no, absolutely. You can, you know.
So
I don't manage the superpowers. I have no power to grant superpowers.
Okay.
So I'm going to let you do whatever superpower you want to be.
Right. So I guess if I could, it would be telekinesis.
Oh, wow.
Right. So I think about Dr. Xavier, mm-hmm. X-Men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jean Grey from the X-Men. I've always, you know, when I was as a kid reading those comics,
yeah.
I thought, I wish I could do that.
Well, listen, Lieutenant Colonel Bain, this has been fantastic. I mean, it's really enlightened for me, but it truly has been a great, great conversation. Enjoyed having you here, and we look forward to having you in the future. Thanks for your time. Thanks for being here with us.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Well, this concludes another episode of Equipping the Corps. I hope you've enjoyed our conversation today. If so, please take a couple minutes, leave us a review, subscribe, tell your friends about us. Till next time, Manny Pacheco signing off.